This is issue number 435 of the Secret Identity Podcast for June 8th, 2012. Today is a special creator spotlight show that features the Boston Comic-Con 2012 Creator-Owned Comics panel.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids! That's a game!
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here with everybody's favorite Matt. Matt Man, how are you today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. This is a very special episode of Secret Identity, so we're just doing sort of an intro here today. But this is the panel that I moderated at Boston Comic-Con 2012, which was the creator-owned comics panel. And you had Joe Benitez and Jeremy Bastian and Becky Cloonan and Jeff Darrow and Ben Templesmith, which is a pretty eclectic and experienced group of creators. And there was probably, I would say the room was about 80% full, and there was probably about 60 people or more in that particular panel. And that was my first time moderating a panel full of people. I mean, I've certainly interviewed plenty of people. I've certainly talked to a lot of creators, but getting up on stage, which there was a stage there, with a group of five different creators, none of whom I really knew very well going into the panel, there's a special kind of, I guess, awkwardness that comes with running one of those panels because you are sort of wrangling all of the different personalities and trying to keep things on track, and you don't know what questions are going to come from the audience. And so it came out really good though.
Yeah. You did a great job. When we came in, because the room was a little off the beaten path, you had
it
to kind
of definitely off the beaten path.
You had to find this one. This was, King Solomon's Mines that you were trying to find. But we got in there and it was really nice because you had a nice control of everything. And the way that when you do a panel, the way at least I do one is I have to at least have a half hour's worth of questions in my head, because you are asking questions until somebody else starts asking, because all it usually takes is one person to ask a question, or it takes one of the guys or girls on the panel to make one comment that everybody goes, oh yeah, that reminds me of, and then it just turns into a free-for-all because they're not there for you. You're there to kind of keep it going, keep it in order. Right. The people that are there to hear the people talk.
Yes, and so it was a great experience, and in talking to the creators after the panel, they really enjoyed it. They really had a good time. As far as the audio quality of this broadcast, it's almost an hour long because that's how long the panel was. It starts off a little rough and it ends a little rough, but everything in the middle is really solid in terms of the audio quality. What happens in the beginning is there's a lot of different people talking and people are clapping and everything. So once that settles down and we're doing the question and answer piece, that rolls along really well. And then it gets sort of, there's a lot of chaos at the end of it, but overall it came out good. And in terms of the audio quality stuff, and I think this of the creator spotlights as well, you're giving up the level of quality that you're hearing right now when you and I are sitting in your basement and recording. But I'm a big believer in, if you can hear what a creator has to say, I will sacrifice some of the audio quality to do that. And this panel, basically, if you weren't there, you're not going to get it anywhere else.
Yeah.
So the fact that we can even bring it to you and it came out as good as it did is kind of exciting, because it was a really good panel. And there's some great answers on here from the creators about, you know, what's going on today with creator-owned comics, what are the pros and cons of it, and it's interesting to see perspectives from a panel that ranged not only in experience but in age as well.
Yeah.
So you've got Joe Benitez and you've got Jeff Darrow, who have been around for a long time, and you've got other creators who maybe are newer on the scene like Jeremy Bastian, and then you've got Becky Cloonan and Ben Templesmith that sort of fall somewhere in the middle, and so it was really a nice mix of personalities, and it was a fun time.
Yeah, and you also – it's very eclectic with what they've done. If you
– right.
When you're rattling off what they've done and what they're doing, it's pretty interesting, because with Joe Benitez, he's been in the industry for an awful long time and has touched a lot of different things. And you've got Becky Cloonan, who is now doing Conan.
Right.
And then you have Ben Templesmith, who has – you know, I think he's probably the only one up there that had a movie made of one of his creations. So you've got a really different feel for it, a different group of people, which is great. And anytime you're anywhere around Ben Temple Smith, hold on to your hats because something nutty's going to happen. He's going to say something crazy, but he is so into what he's doing too.
Well, and he has a lot of great answers in this particular panel that he was on, and he was kind of busting my chops when we were starting because I was saying some of the works that people were associated with when I was introducing them on the panel, and he was whispering other ones to me. Not like I didn't know them, but he was like, Fell and this one and this one. So I'm trying to introduce him and he's doing that at the same time. And he was the one who I was really wanting to see what he thought about the panel afterwards. And he came up afterwards. And so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That came out really good. So it was a fun time. If you weren't there, then this will be new to you. And like I said, the audio quality isn't the best in the world, but it's definitely worth sitting through to hear what these guys have to say. So we are going to sign off now. Enjoy this Creator Spotlight special, and we will be back with your regular programming again next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, we're going to get started because it is after 5 now, so... Everybody is here for the creator-owned comics panel, right?
Yes.
Excellent. So we have a very diverse and experienced group up here of creators who have worked both with creator-owned comics and non-creator-owned comics. And I'm going to introduce them, and I have a few questions to sort of get the ball rolling, and then we can open it up to the rest of the group as well. The description of this panel tonight talked about how this group was going to speak to you about indie comics and their growing influence in the comic market, which is a really big topic. So we're going to try and maybe bite off a few chunks of that as we sort of go along. So without further ado, Mr. Ben Temple Smith, you may be familiar with from Bell, Singular 7, Wormwood, Gentleman Corpse, Dead Space, and he's also done some amazing covers for Wasteland, but tons of stuff. And Becky Clunan, whose story Wolves is here today. East Coast Rising is now working on Conan as well. If you've checked out the new Conan series, it's really awesome. We have Joe Benitez, whose creation Lady Mechanica, all 3 years of he's also done a ton of stuff over for Aspen. We have Jeremy Bastian, who is the creator, writer, a collected edition is coming from Archaea, I believe you said around July, Jim, is that right? And then Mr. Jeff Darrow is in the and you know he has certainly been involved with The Matrix, but also Speed Racer. He's done work with Hanna-Barbera, Hard Boiled. Shaolin Cowboy is the creator-owned project that he's probably most familiar with recently.
I love that.
But his career spans, we pretty much grew up with Jeff Darrow in our lives. So I guess a good question to sort of get the ball rolling with today's panel is, it feels like, especially with the comics media and with social media right now, that it is really a fantastic time to be working on creator-owned projects. A lot of positive buzz about that. As a group who's been working in creator-owned comics for a long time now, how have you seen the landscape sort of change over the last couple of years? And I guess whoever wants to maybe jump in with that. Or have you felt like it's changed over the last couple of years?
It's changed completely. All right. Every small publisher, like generally small publisher and the comic media things, they've all now pretty much been swallowed up by bigger fish. Mm-hmm. Everyone else in the main media business industry things are getting involved in comics now and buying up the smaller publishers and players and stuff. The only ones I think left that are kind of independent are Dark Horse is Mike Richardson. That's the one guy and always has been. And Image is still Image. So, but everyone else is kind of like a big player now, with the potential for a bigger media. So when you're dealing with creator-owned comics with them, you're actually dealing with a much larger entity.
Right. I don't know,
like Time Warner, Disney, blah, blah, blah. So, and it's changed in a way, because of social media, that you have the capacity to not really even need a publisher if you've got an established audience. If you're prepared to do it yourself, you can cut out the middleman completely, really, especially with digital now as well. And digital is also being eaten up and swallowed by bigger fish. So it may become where you're forced to go to one or two Nexus big websites to do your digital, but which kind of defeats the point of the internet to me in a way. But it's very changing and very interesting. So
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's funny because when I first started doing mini comics, it's almost exactly how I do it now, except I send them out to get printed. So, I mean, there's a lot of changes on one hand, but on the other hand, the way I'm doing them now is still kind of the way I was doing them in like 1998. Because, you know, I just go to conventions and I bring my suitcase filled with comics and, you know, it's so it's...
You just sell
it's
a lot more
on
now.
Yeah, I just sell more. But, well, yeah.
You should buy Wolves.
I gave away a lot more when I first started, and I sell a lot more now. But, yeah, it's funny that how much social media has changed and how much the industry has completely changed, but the way I handle it and the way I approach it is still very much like, you know, I did when I was in college.
Anyone else care to jump in on that one?
Well, with... like, I did a Kickstarter campaign, and that's a really good way to, you know, fund your own thing and actually be able to make, like, a lot of money in doing it and not needing a publisher at all. And it's a great way to, you know, get your product to the people, no middlemen, in, you know, at all. And then you can really, like, there's several projects that, because they went to a certain level, they were able to, like, upgrade the paper and upgrade the sort of packaging of it, so you can make a really decent product, too, that way.
And you're sort of gauging the support for that project before you, you know, embark on the next phase of it. So if it's that you have this comic and you want to collect it in a printed edition or something like that, you're sort of bringing your built-in audience with you. They help fund that book, and it kind of goes from there. So between that and what Becky and Ben were talking about, it feels like one of the things that's changed is that whereas it might have been more difficult in the past when you're dealing with primarily print comics to move into the industry or to break in or to get the word out about your book, digital has kind of equaled that playing field for new creators coming through the front door. You can market it yourself. You can use social networks. You can get people on Facebook. And you can bring the attention to your book. So in that way, it sort of opened up a lot of doors for new creators and sort of coming in. As evidenced by the Kickstarter campaign that you did, which was extremely successful.
In a strange way, and this my theory is, apart from Marvel and DC, who have huge gigantic corporations and infrastructure behind them to do TV ads or whatever they want, you know, we're just normal people, and with the smaller companies, generally speaking, we're better at promoting because it's us,
right,
ourselves, direct to our audience, than they are. Because, I mean, I have more Twitter followers than all my publishers, generally speaking, so I can get the word out much better than that, so... I forget what the point was, I just wanted to say that.
But I think you're also, who better to evangelize about your book than you? You're the corner.
Yeah.
So you're cutting out the middleman in terms of the PR person who has a good working knowledge of your book, but they're not going to speak about it in the way that
it is. It's coming to the point where, what is the publisher doing for you? Apart from, obviously you can front money to publish a book and put it in Diamond, which is the standard way, but apart from that, you want people to know about your book, and the best way to do that is do it yourself. Mm-hmm. So why am I giving these people... unless they're paying me directly, yeah, money's great. But,
sure.
But, you know, if you're only making profit off it, if sales are good, which is the way I always look, I never get paid to do any creator on comic. I never take money. I only take money when the royalties come in from sales. So not everyone does it that way, but apparently that's the way I've chosen to do it, mostly. And, yeah, so I'm currently looking at, like, why don't I just do everything myself and see how that goes?
Right.
We'll see. An image is still the best deal because... their image.
Anybody else on that? Obviously, everybody in this group has done, I'm not sure if you have or not, Jeremy, but creator-owned and non-creator-owned work. One of the things that I feel like is happening in the discussion today about creator-owned books is there seems to be this sort of us-against-them mentality of people who are working on creator-owned stuff versus people who might be doing work for some of the bigger companies. And some of that talk has kind of turned nasty. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about creator-owned work versus non-creator-owned work? And is that something that you, and I guess to use an example, like some of the stuff that Eric Powell has done with the Goon, taking pretty clear shots at, you know, licensed comics, some of the discussion by the fan community about people selling out when they're doing books for a major company as opposed to doing creator-owned work. Personally, I don't really feel like that's helpful to the discussion, but it's a discussion that's happening out there. How do you feel about that?
I think it's like people who actually do their own creator-owned feel a little bit more passionate about the product. I mean, it's like, you know, I've actually had, I've done the work with DC, you know, Good Page Rate and all that, but creatively, I didn't get anything. I get more out of doing my own book than I do out of working for a company. And it's just because the way I've worked my whole career, it's pretty much I do whatever I want. And it's not like that when you're working for Marvel or DC, pretty much, you know, with the big two, it's like, yeah. Or any publisher who hires you, you have to sort of stick to some parameters. But when I'm doing my own book, I do whatever the fuck I want. And it's like, whatever I want to do, that's what I do. And I'm more more like connected to the project.
Okay.
I mean, and the thing is, again, to each his own. I mean, it's like, who cares if they're working for another company? It's like music, you know, when someone's doing, you know, a little indie band, all of a sudden it blows up and they're selling. It's like, why? It's like they're getting the music out to a broader audience. So if they go off and work at, that's like, who cares?
Yeah. There's always going to be like nasty discussion no matter what. But I remember being at, I think, Mocha years ago, and I started working for Vertigo. Some kid came by and he looked at my book and said, you know, Vertigo on it. And he's like, sell out. And I was like, I'm not making enough money to, you know, I can't. Is working for Vertigo even considered selling out? Because it's like, you know, you're not even breaking that much, really. I mean, comics doesn't pay that much anyway, so I feel like even working for the big two, how can you even call it selling out when you're not, you know?
Well, it's funny that you mention that, because Palmiotti had written a couple weeks ago, I saw a tweet of his where he was talking about him and Amanda were at Mocha a few years ago for the pro.
Yeah.
But because they also worked on mainstream comics, they took a lot of negative feedback from some of the other creators that were at the show and some of the other fans at the show, which he was kind of taken aback by, but they're doing their creator own book, so
it's weird.
It's kind of weird that way.
I think there's always going to be that, like, us versus them kind of, you know, but I don't know, I think the gap's closing, you know, especially with, you know, the social media and Kickstarter and stuff. People are able to do things more themselves and put it out there, and exactly like Ben was saying, cutting out the middleman is, like, you know, that's, like, the best thing you can do. I did actually. I was thinking about doing Kickstarter with mine, but I was like, I'm going to cut out the middleman and just fund it myself. So I just took pre-orders directly from my store. But that's just because I have enough followers on Twitter. Like, Ben's like, after years of, you know, tweeting nonsense, apparently some people like to follow that.
I think part of the trick with creator-owned versus... I wasn't aware that things turned nasty. I don't know.
Well, I think it's just discussion. You know, everything turns nasty.
You get some creators, I'll call them creators, professionals, because what are you really creating if it's a 50-year-old character? I mean, you add to it, but you get people that dedicate their lives in a career sense to the big two or big three, whatever, licensed stuff that they don't really own, but they continue on. And it can be great stuff. I'm not dissing it. And then you get people that pretty much only do brand new things and launch a brand new thing from the ground up. And pretty much, mostly that's what I've done. I do some work for hire sort of stuff. But the experience of launching a brand new property every time you do like a new miniseries or something, that develops an audience that are open to new things and willing to give things a try. But if you're only ever working on, say, X-Men or something, those people like X-Men comics. They're not necessarily going to follow you onto a thing. So the more creator-owned stuff you do, the more it builds and the more audience you'll get that are willing to accept your new work. And that's why, you know, Becky can take pre-orders on a thing, just because she's got an audience willing to do that. But if you just jumped straight from the other stuff to creator-owned comics, I think you'd not be starting from scratch, even if you had a high profile, but you'd be lower down, and you'd have to build that audience up. So the more you do, the greater it benefits you, I think.
Well, sales-wise, I mean, anyone jumping off X-Men and, you know, doing that creator-owned is not going to reach, you know, that
they're number. Not going to get their X-Men numbers.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of times they you know... I've known some people who think, oh yeah, I do my own book and I'm, you know, I'm selling this much. It's like, no, that's not the way it works. I mean, even some well-known artists and creators have actually done that, where they're working on a big book and then all of a sudden they jump on their project and it's, I mean, that's the way it works. You know, I mean, people are buying X-Men and Batman and Spider-Man because they love those characters. You put anyone on those books, they're still going to buy it. Maybe not, you know... I think when you get a really top creator, you know, on the books, the sales go up because, again, there's more interest. But for the most part, there's always a steady sales, you know, for those particular characters.
The big companies are not interested in making us great.
Right.
They're making us rich. They're interested in selling their properties so that make their money. And if it benefits us too, that's great.
Sell more toys and
sell more pajamas.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all about, you know, getting the product out on a timely basis. You know, that's more important sometimes than the actual product. than the actual, like, whatever the results. Like, it's like, they don't care if it's amazing or crap. It's like, oh, we need to get the book out this month, so get it out.
But they do compensate us rather well for that.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with it either. But yeah, creator owned is, I'll be quiet.
Well, this is your panel, so you can go on as much as
I haven't had much sleep, far too much alcohol, and no food. So
okay.
Tell me to shut up if you need me to.
So one of the things that as doing creator-owned comics, that in the past when we were talking more about print-based comics and the comic book shelf, as it were, you're fighting for shelf space amongst all those other books and big companies and everything else. With digital, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but the internet is now your comic book shelf. I mean, you look at like Comixology, you go on that app, the independent books are right up there with every other book, and it's all sort of there and graphically and some of the other ones there. So that to me feels like something that has really helped level that playing field, is now you can get your book out there almost as much as everybody else. You may not have the marketing budget behind it, but if you know how to leverage those tools, because you've been doing it in the trenches all along, you can really bring a lot of attention to that. And that seems to be one of the real benefits for creator-owned books right now.
I apparently have an app through IDW for most of my IDW work. So I think I was one of the first creators to have a dedicated app in that sense. But
that's really cool.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. It was my idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Every creator should have their own app.
I was just thinking that.
The benefits their own work. But the trick is, if you've got your work with various rights issues, you can't put it all in the same thing.
Yeah, I have like 20 pages.
But the thing with digital is, yeah, like Comixology is now huge. Graphically, and there's a few others that graphically are sort of doing a weird sideways step to other things because maybe they're feeling
great.
The competition.
Well, graphically they had an app that just wasn't as good, as the reader just wasn't as good, so I think they just stopped doing that and learned.
But the thing with digital is, I don't want to necessarily swap one middleman for another.
Right.
So we'll still have to go through a conduit, and they'll take whatever they're going to take before we get. And so it'd be great if we could just build some sort of hardware that we can all just make our own app magically and then update it on our own thing, you know? So we don't need a Nexus. But Nexus is great because you get an audience, an indoor audience that are going to look at your work.
I just started with the digital stuff. I put my mini comic up, and I used Graphically, and they take if you're a self-publisher, they just take a flat fee. And then
it's like the image model, but for digital.
Right, and then they put it on like the iTunes and Kindle and Kobo and Google Reader and all that stuff. So you know, it's different than Comixology, which takes a percentage. And it was like, you know, it just seemed like a more creator friendly. Graphically has the better reader. I mean, Comixology has a better reader, and you know, I think so many more people read off Comixology. But I just felt like for my own book, Graphically it was more. It just seemed tailored for what I'm looking to do.
And you're free to take it elsewhere whenever you want, like eventually.
Yeah, so I could put it on Comixology and Graphically if I wanted to. I could just take it off, you know, Graphically whenever I want. So it just seemed like they're great. I have known. And they're still in beta too, so.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's actually right. A couple of weeks before I saw you at today's show, the podcast.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. So when you're coming up with a project now, you're working on a project, is digital part of your strategy from the get-go now in terms of, I may release this digitally first and then I may collect it in print, or has that now found its way into the creative process from the start, or are we not there yet with the stuff that you guys are working on?
I'm kind of old school. I still like print a lot. So I kind of want to go to dedicated hardcover things in sort of the French format, cool albums with like 48-page hardcovers. And then release them as like more book chapter type things rather than the single floppy issues. But not to rip anyone off, just I like the dedicated, you know, maybe it is rip people off. No, not really. having the dedicated big special work first, and then maybe releasing it later on as just with a pared down version with less extra material in the back and then sort of a DVD extras that you can do in a comic, but just release the single floppies later on. So maybe do that. I don't know, but I like digital, but to me it's still an afterthought because I haven't dabbled in it yet, but maybe I should.
I'm in the same way.
Okay. Yeah, it's like I've thought about something along the lines of maybe if I did a new project of some sort, it's like maybe putting like a free preview online and just giving that, or the free book, and just to sort of to get people, you know, not everyone's going to pick up your book.
Sure.
So it's like if you just say, hey, check it out for free, you know, yeah, it's, you know, give a download for free, and it's like, if you dig it.
But how do we sign digital comics? We won't be here for signing things.
That's always good. Stay home.
I don't know how my book is really going to work digitally. I never really anticipated putting it on a digital like format. I love the hardcover. I love the hard copy. And then the craftsmanship of like the book and how they make it and stuff like that. So I've always been a little bit more antiquated in that arena.
Jeff?
What they said. All right, so we talked about Kickstarter a little bit. So one of the things, obviously, if you're doing work that's not creator-owned, you're dealing with other people, you're dealing with deadlines, you're dealing with all that kind of stuff. As you guys are working on your own projects, how do you stay focused and get things done in the time frame that you want? Is that one of the most challenging part of doing creator-owned things, is you're either working it in between other projects or you are having to really stay on top of yourself to get that done?
Yeah, you become your own boss, and that's not a good thing. Well, I mean, it could be, but yeah, for me it is. Because it's like, now books take a lot longer because I don't have anyone to answer to.
I used to be very good at that.
Yeah.
And then I stopped doing comics for a little bit, and now I'm getting back to doing that again. But I think the goal should be you should be able to take as much time as you want to make it good the way you want to.
But I think
the whole cycle thing, with monthly flop,
I think
I like the grind.
If you actually,
I like it in a sense because it makes you produce.
Yeah.
If you have 10 days to do a page, you're gonna take 10 days to do a page instead of it's a lot of times it's not about working 10 days in a row. It's about working 2 hours here and then not working for a week and then the day before the page is due working on it. Then.
Yeah. But me going slow is doing one page a day. Really.
Yeah.
That's
Already.
A nice pace. One page.
That's a good page.
Yeah.
You got to think about it too, that everyone's, when you're reading a comic, you're only going to spend like 5 seconds on a panel. You maybe a little bit more if someone's really into it. So you got to think like, if I'm going to spend, a few hours on this panel, that's almost too much. So when I'm doing my creator-owned book with like Conan on the side, or Conan first and creator-owned, whatever, I try to do like a punch-for-punch kind of thing where I do one page of Conan and then I do one page of my own book and kind of go like that, and then if I'm falling behind, I just put one to the side for a bit and catch up, and it seems to work for me.
I treat each project separately. Like, I can't get in the mindset of doing one book.
Well, they're both mine are like both sword and sorcery kind of things,
okay.
So they're kind of like, and I'm in the same headspace for both, so it works.
Anybody else? I was just gonna say, I don't think I've ever spent more than 20 minutes or less than 20 minutes looking at this gentleman's work. I mean, I just stare at a panel for like ever.
That is true.
Yeah. Jeff is the exception.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't draw backgrounds.
I wouldn't expect anyone to look at my panels for more than 5 seconds.
No, I mean, no, I was just going to say it's like, I think it's like hours and hours of just looking at one panel, and it's like densely,
We're also creators.
Yeah.
And I think Jeremy's style is very, very much like that as well, in terms of very, very detailed backgrounds, a lot of stuff going on in the panel too. So
I have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It comes through on the page. So,
I mean, that's the thing. Again, it's like when you're doing your own book, you tend to be more passionate about the work. Because at the end of the day, it's like this is the expression of your art. This is what people are gonna. I guess this is what you're trying to put out, and you're trying to express yourself in a certain way, and you're trying to get as much out of out of your work. You just want to do something cool, something good. And because I know when I've done work, it's just a lot of times just crap it out just because I have to. But with this, it's like I feel I have to be able to make sure that every panel is to my satisfaction. So it takes a little longer.
One of the things that's really risen over the past, I would say, 6 or 7 years as well, is the enthusiast press for comic books. I mean, not only do you have some major websites who have had some been around for longer than 7 years now, but everybody has a podcast, everybody has a blog, everybody comes to shows with, I'm sitting here on a podcast, and we've been doing our podcast for 6 years. Do you feel like you use them as a tool, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I sort of feel like as a podcaster, one of the cool things has been talking to a lot of independent creators and sort of being part of the grassroots effort to get the word out about their books. That seems to be a mutually beneficial relationship that has sprung up for podcasters. How do you guys feel about that, and do you sort of look for that relationship when you're putting out a new product?
I've
always been blessed with people paying attention to my work since I started, because I got really lucky with a thing that got turned into a movie. But I don't know, comics media in general, if that's what you want to call it, is a strange beast, but
yeah,
everything's now been bought up by larger companies. Like, I think Comic Vine just got bought by CBS or something, something like that. I got an email with a new email address. Yeah, like,
that's cool.
The landscape of that is changing, yes. But then you get all the grassroots people like yourself and podcaster type people. But I don't know, there's a lot of advertorial in comics media in general. Some of that's okay, but I don't know. There's no real news in comics media, but reviews are good. Honest reviews are good. I've had some crappy ones, and I appreciate them because it means they're actually honest. So.
And that's kind of why I use the term enthusiast press, as opposed to, I think that in a lot of ways we like to believe ourselves to be journalists, but but that's not necessarily the case.
It's half the time you guys get the actual honest, really good interviews that go in depth, what people want to know. They don't want just the quick soundbite stuff that is advertorially kind of stuff. You know, what is the latest thing we're selling? But what's his name? The Word Balloon podcast, too. I'm a big fan of the very long, rambly
podcast.
It's good stuff. But
yeah, I think in a way we're all sort of the DVD commentary nerds who now like to provide that for every comic book that we read. So we seek you out as creators to say, tell me all about this panel. How did you put this together? What's your process like and everything else? Because that's when we're watching movies at home, that's what we're doing. We want to see all about the process. And that's one of the reasons I got into doing this in the first place, was just because I love to hear that part of the process. And so
I think the big basic media are important. But they're not going to do the interview that is aware of the rest of your body of work and actually really embrace it and push it out there in a way that the smaller guy who's just a fan of your work will do. So I could probably value guys like you more than the big people. The big people are necessary because they're a next. People are going to look at their website, so it's great. But at the end of the day, it's not all the information you want to get out there.
I've since doing my own creator and stuff, since I started self-publishing again, like on a larger scale last year, because I try and do like a book a year of like self-published stuff, and I've done stuff with friends of mine and, you know, collaborations and stuff. But my first one that I did last year is called Wolves, and I started talking to comic book stores. Like, I was like actually, you know, emailing people who owned comic book stores and getting to know them, and, you know, you just meet a lot of new people and you know, trying to get people to stock it in their stores, and they're like, oh, we only go through Diamond, and then I have to kind of argue with them, and it ends up being kind of fun, but, you know, through the press and podcast people, so I end up, you know, just getting to know a lot more about the industry again, I think, is really, self-publishing has made me look at all the aspects of the industry in a different way and kind of get to know it. So, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, but for great benefit too.
Yeah, and you're saying like enthusiast press, you know, I feel that way so much about comics, especially the self-published ones, because it's like I'm not making money on Wolves. It'll pay for my conventions and like when I go out at night, you know, I eat dinner. It pays for my food and it pays for my hotels and stuff. But I'm not really seeing any money. But you know, it might pay for an extra print run. But it's not like I'm making a page rate on it. And it's something I do for love. And so when I see other people doing it, it just, you know, enthusiasm is the right word, because it makes me excited to go back home and like do my next book. And you know, I retweet people all the time, and you know, people ask me for retweets. I do, and I ask people for retweets all the time. So it's cool the way social media and all that's kind of worked out.
I'd say we've served our purpose then, if that makes you want to go and put out more awesome books.
So. Yeah.
Well, I've been selfish for a long time now, and I want to open up the room to questions. There's a mic right over there, so if people have questions and they want to just form a line and step up to the mic, you guys can start firing away. And
just like Gary Springfield.
Yeah.
It's very
just don't throw anything.
Don't ever
throw anything.
Not all at once, you guys. Calm down.
Calm down. Relax.
Simmer down.
Can you hear from Jeff at all? I haven't really. I know you have seen a lot on your website. About everything. Whatever you want to talk about, anything at all, just share.
I'm a little concerned about recent developments on Gossip Girl.
You heard it here first, Rhea.
So how would you take that on Small Press Comics versus Day 2, Day 3? What do you think about that?
I'm an odd guy because I started out in Europe, and in Europe, you own it. There's no doubt about it. You own it. I mean, the companies, they might be able to continue printing whatever you do, but if you decide you want to take Asterix and go over to self-publish, or you want to go to Glenn Howe or any one of those publishers, that's what you do. So I started out that way, and then when I went from there, I went to Dark Horse, and I still, with Frank, I own everything I've done. So it's not something I fought for, it's just the way I sort of grew up in the comics world. So I've been very, very lucky in that respect. Unlike a character I won't mention, Gossip Girl.
Most comic book publishers will want to take at least, 50% of your rights to
They say it, so you create your own, but then it's
not really.
And if you don't do it within a certain amount of time, if you stop doing it, then they'll own it. I mean, there's very few. I mean, Dark Horse, I don't know. Dark Horse, you own it. I mean, at least I do. I don't know what their deals are nowadays, but there was never any doubt who owned that stuff.
I was just curious. This is kind of a meta question. What's one piece of advice you would give to your younger self, like to go back and talk to your younger self now?
Learn what reversion rights are before you sign your first contract. And learn the hard way.
Everyone learns the hard way, though. Like, I feel like, if you're going to be a creator, I have a few stories like that with contracts and things that maybe you wish you didn't sign. My students would ask me like, well, how do you know? How do you avoid that? And I tell them, well, most of you just will have to learn the hard way. And when it happens, just kind of suck it up and go to the next book.
Eat better and exercise.
That's a good one.
I'd say, I was always concerned about trying to get a job with one of the big companies, and that's kind of why I started Cursed Pirate Girls, so that I had a product so I could show these companies, what I could do and how I do it and stuff, and then I just had a lot of fun writing this story and then getting into the world of it that I was like, who needs those bigger guys? I got this thing. People seem to like it, so.
Jeff?
Don't stop trying. Just keep working. No matter what anybody says to you, just keep going.
That's for sure.
Do you guys think that the growing number of creator-owned projects and independent projects will help pull in an audience to the comic book industry that isn't currently there? Non-superhero enthusiasts? Expand.
I think for sure, because it's like, if you're marketing your own book, like Ben said, like who else knows better than you who to market it to? When I first was doing my book last year, I was looking at, how do I get this out to people who would, maybe I really like heavy metal, so maybe people who listen to heavy metal would, so I follow a few blogs on Tumblr that are just mostly heavy metal or mythology blogs or something, or werewolf blogs, and I found out the people who ran that, and I sent them, and I was like, if you like it, could you just talk a little bit about it, and just blog about it, feature it on your Tumblr or whatever, but they did, and a bunch of new people started, who were like, oh, I never read comics before, but I thought this was awesome. So hopefully if everyone starts doing that, and if you have a book about cooking, try to send it to people who do cooking blogs or something, and then that's how. When you look at Japan, they have comics for everything, and everybody reads them. It's sports comics and comics about animals, and just everyone who ever, if you've got a pet, you'll read this comic about cats.
I think it's as Americans, for the most part, think of comic books as kid thing. We don't respect it, or the mass populace doesn't respect comics as an art form. They think of it, it's just, oh, it's, it's kids, kid stuff. And, in Europe and Asia and other countries, it's actually you know, akin to a novel or some, you know, people are respected and they treat the work as such. You know, it's not just, oh, you know, you're drawing, you know, Spider-Man or Superman, and they dismiss it. And I think that maybe with all the new books, all the independent, maybe it's like people might start seeing it in a different light, you know, because it's not all superheroes. I mean, they're just in this panel alone, you know, the genres are, you know, completely different and looks and feel. And it's like, hopefully that'll bring in a new, new audience to it. I was going to say, it's like the thing that kind of I wish that the big two would do is actually cater to the kids more, because the thing I don't see as much is younger fans. You know, it's like I see them as they should be the ones sort of bringing in the fans. You know, because again, it's like I got into comics because when I was a kid, I was watching Transformers and G.I. Joe, and they had a commercial for G.I. Joe comics and Transformers comics. It's like, okay, I'll check one out, and that got me in there. And it's like, I don't understand why they don't put a little commercial after, like, the JLA cartoon or something, like, hey, go check out, you know, Further Adventures of, you know, Batman or whatever at your local comic book shop. And it's like, that might bring more, you know, a younger, you know, because I think once they're hooked, you know. So I'd hope that, you know, new readers sort of get into the genre or into comics, you know.
The other thing, apparently it's legal, someone told me it's legal, you can't do it, but I don't have TV anymore, but when I do watch it, like in a hotel, I see ads. There was one from the American Beverage Association or something saying, hey, we put less sugar in soda. I'm like, okay, that's nice. They're not actually selling me soda, but they're trying to sell the perception of the overall industry of soda pop, right? Why aren't isn't there an association for comics just making comics cool, just doing generic ads for comics?
Yeah. Like, hey, we make awesome comics. Comics.
Like, Scott McCloud just coming on and, you know, talking about different parts of the book.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Like, you know, like, hey, check out this medium.
We should start a Kickstarter for that.
But, I mean, again, it's like, it's our responsibility, but, again, when you have such a big platform like the Big Two, I think it's really on their shoulders to help a lot, because they have that, and it's like, we can do our part, but we don't have the millions of dollars and access to, you know, media like they do. So it's like, I just figure, you know, I just always thought that they should be at least helping bring it. Like, it's not, hey, don't buy all comics. It's like, well, look at your comic, and it's like, that'll bring them into, you know.
I think every industry kind of does that. Because I see ads for Lockheed, you know, the aviation industry, the arms military industry. Right. So we're not buying whistles,
right?
But they still sell us, and like, hey, this is cool, we're American, and, you know, all the sort of perception changing thing. Right. We ain't got any comics. I don't think it would cost too much money either, really, just to set up a fund or something.
I think the other problem too is because they're owned by a big corporation,
right?
That it's the comics is such a small percentage of their revenue.
Yeah, like how much does a Superman comic make, right? You know, in net worth, well, or whatever, versus the Superman toys, you know, like, how much
right.
do you...
And they're invested in the brand more than the medium.
Right. Right.
And so they're not being ambassadors for the medium, they're being ambassadors for the character, yeah. or the brand yeah. of that, where I think, as you guys were just talking about, it would be better if we had more ambassadors for the medium, mm-hmm. and the conversation was about learning about that medium and getting that into schools more and getting kids to really jump on board early with comics and changing the perception about it, as opposed to superheroes versus crime comics or the genre topics that we're usually discussing, as opposed to the medium itself.
And I think that's where the self-published, but creator-owned comics come in. Because then you have, like, even you're talking about in libraries and in schools, I mean, there's a wealth of public domain, you know, literature out there that you can do, you know, people do, like, revamps of, or just, like, you know, mashups and stuff that are taught in schools, and, you know, teachers use them as a, you know, they're in libraries, and...
I just signed a lot of comics this weekend so far that were stolen from libraries. It's great.
It must be a good
time. I hope they got replaced, but hey, that's...
But they had to go to the library to get them. That's the
thing. Yeah, they found my books.
So, sure. But they were in a library.
Right, they were in the library.
It's important. But that's where all the creator-owned stuff comes in, is, you know, changing the landscape of the industry. It's not going to be Marvel or DC, even though they put out amazing books. You know, it's like you're going to get... you know, people who are just speaking more for everybody, and people you know, who can reach a wider audience.
Yeah,
like I guess.
I keep hearing, you know, that there's a new renaissance in comics, and it is the indie, you know, comic guys. It's the creator-owned guys, because they're coming up with really cool stories and really amazing art and stuff like that, and they're just stories that aren't being told. And, you know, the big companies are more concerned with, you know, their primary color and secondary color characters, and because they've been selling for years and years and years. And I think this, you know, hopefully the amount of creator-owned books and they're selling, like, on Kickstarter and stuff, and all the money that's being raised for these will, you know, help to say, you know, hey, look at these guys. They do an equally good product, and it doesn't, you know, it's a good competition for the big guys to really, you know, reach out and pull in maybe some new indie guys and stuff like that.
Well, it's a, I see, like, in other shops, what I found out is that a good portion of the shops don't buy anything that, or there's a lot that don't buy anything that's not DC or Marvel. They won't order anything because it's like, well, I'm not gonna take a shot on a new book because I don't want it sitting on my shelf. I've got a bunch of books, so it's like retailers. We need to sort of get them excited and get them sort of supporting some of these newer books. Because again, it's like it's understandable with the economy the way it is. It's like retail is going to order what he or she feels like they can sell, whatever they feel they can move. I understand why they aren't going to order my book or any of the smaller press books, because it's like, well, you know, they don't want to take a shot on something like that. And you know, they know X-Men Avengers is going to sell crap loads, so they're going to buy tons of them, you know.
But if you have enough people coming into your store asking for it, you tell people you're going to go to your store and ask them to order this book, you know.
That's exactly what I try to. The thing is that I want to get the word out with anyone who's my fan or anyone buying the book. Make sure you order it and, you know, reserve a copy. And let them know this book exists. Because it's like, this is the only way a retailer, some retailers don't even know the books exist. Because it's like, their radar is, you know, they just look at, you know, the first part of Diamond and Marvel, and that's it, you know, or Dark Horse. You know, and everything else, maybe Image, but everything else sort of like, skip it. Yeah. So if it's not in the front of Diamond, they sometimes just don't bother. And it's like, if you get the word out to your fans or the people, just, hey, just reserve a copy. You know, just let the retailer know that this book exists. That way it's in their radar. It's like, okay, you know, maybe they'll order one or two, you know, and it'll start the ball rolling that way.
A lot of creators have actually started putting order forms on their websites for books that they're like, hey, print this out, fill this out, bring it into your comic shop, hand it to them.
That's a really great idea.
Book. And in that way, the books that even the retailers realize exist, they are handed an order sheet for, and then it sort of gets the ball rolling. But it kind of highlights the fact that they have so much power in that relationship, the retailer themselves, over what even comes into the store and makes it on the shelf. So it's... in a lot of ways, they're your primary customer.
The retailer is the person you need to target the most, because it's like you need to, and again, I mean, yeah, you got to cater to whatever they want, and a lot of times it's like, well, we just want a regular book, and on a regular basis, and that's where, you know, as me personally, that's where I mess up, you know, getting the book out on a timely basis, and because after a while, people do get sick if the book isn't out. You know, when they're expecting the book to come out, you know.
Especially if they're caught in the current churn of most of the books that they buy come out every month. And if it's a month and a half, then that's late to them, and then they get upset about that. But, to go back to what you guys were talking about earlier with the creator and stuff, you know, one of the perks is that you can take as long as it needs to take to get the project out, and hopefully the readers understand that, that's taking that long, so that when it comes out, it'll be a better product.
And the other problem too is like, it's a lot of times you're not getting paid until you get the product out. So you're talking about a month, 2 months of not getting any revenue in, unless you have money saved up. It's like, yeah, it can. You have to start taking on, you know, cover work here, little fill in there. It's like all of a sudden it's like, your project gets further and further away from its launch date. You know.
And then you have to restart the PR machine, because when that next edition is coming out, and you're the PR guy because you're the creator or person getting the word out about your book, you've got to kickstart that process again, whether it's with the Enthusiast Press or whether it's on your blog or whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. So that's a whole added layer of momentum that you have to then create again for the book. So I'm sure that's a challenge.
Yeah.
Other questions from the audience then?
So how do you motivate yourself to work on like a 200 page of a story without knowing at all how it's going to sell?
So you do it because you want to do it. You know? Like, again, if I was motivated by money, I'd be working at the big two. You know, it's like I would be making twice as much as what I'm making now, working on a book, you know. But it's like I would rather do my book when it comes out and know that whatever the end result will look, you know, will be as satisfactory, I guess. It's like, but you know, again, motivation is, for me personally, a big problem. Yeah. Unless I have to pay rent, then it's okay, I gotta get this paid.
I think for me it's habitual. I guess you just get up, you get coffee, and, you know, maybe eat oatmeal, and then you
if you're in a good routine, if you know how to manage yourself properly, then yeah, that's something that, you know, you need to be on a regular basis, you know, get yourself into a routine.
But I think also once you've done one or two projects, you get a fair idea of, yeah, okay, this thing will probably sell at least enough to justify me doing it in the first place. And the more you do, the more it snowballs, because hopefully you'll be getting royalties from the last work, the long tail economics of it. So you'll be getting small amounts of money for the first thing you ever did still coming in as you do newer and newer work. So in the end, you won't be worrying too much about if this one sells to, just to pay your rent versus, okay, this, I've already got half my rent paid. This one will do okay. And, you know, if you build it, they will come. But your first one's going to be your hardest anyway. So.
And you said, like, 200 pages? I'm only working in, like, 22-page chunks. So it's a bit easier for me with the monthly book, and even my mini comics are short stories. So to print it, it's not too big of a, you know, a financial risk. And then to make the money back is going to take, like, you know.
And that's where publishers sometimes come in, too, because they will advance you royalties. So you can do the book, and then, you know, they take their cut, blah, blah, blah. That's how a lot of publishers work. So.
Yeah, I would say just make it fun. Like, if you make it fun and exciting to draw, I mean, you like to draw because you like to draw this and that and that.
Yeah.
And so when I'm working on my story, I might have written something, but then it's like, well, how can I make that more interesting or fun to draw? And so then I start brainstorming about how I can change it and sort of mutate it a little bit. And then you end up with a turkey head and a cart being pulled by two squirrels.
But that's actually that's the thing about doing creating a book on your own and making it up. You could. I know that for me, it's like the story sort of tends to take me in different directions. And even though I knew, you know, like I had this whole plan of how this book was going to end, all of a sudden it's like it's a completely 180, and I'm like going into a different direction. And it's just like, well, okay, where's the story taking me? And it's like, yeah, like you said, sometimes it's like, man, this scene is boring as fuck. So what can I do to make it, you know, jazz it up? And it's like that's a challenge in itself, and always keep yourself entertained, and I think when you're in the zone, when you're really digging what you're doing, it's like it just sort of flows out of you, you know.
Yeah.
It's those times when you're just sort of like you know, have to get it done, and just, you know, it's done, but are you happy with the result? And sometimes it's no, and most of the times it's no, so you have to start from scratch and make it more interesting. You know?
Yeah, I want to know exactly how much of Shaolin Cowboy is scripted and how much is just sort of free-form, like, double-end chainsaw, bow stick, writing a dead carcass.
I can lure you by my secrets. It meanders quite a bit, and having, you know, it's sort of, well, what do I want to draw today? And,
that's why you need a wheel of crab, shark.
I don't know. I'm probably the most undisciplined person in here. I don't know. I just draw what I like to do. I guess, once again, going back to Europe, I worked with an artist who recently passed, named Jean-Giraud Mobius. And he, when he wasn't doing it, when he wasn't drawing Lieutenant Blueberry, which is probably the best Western that's ever been drawn, he would
he created this persona named Mobius, because the writer of this Western was very concerned that when he was drawing this crazy story for himself, that it was going to hurt the brand of Lieutenant Blueberry. So he became Mobius. So that, and people, even over there, they would think it was two different guys, this guy named Jean Giraud and a guy named Mobius. And he would just draw this sort of, you know, he'd start him one, you know, the guy comes out of the door, and then, you know, it just keeps going. And that's, I sort of got that from him, from one of them, just like, I mean, you know, you get up every morning, you walk out the door, and you don't know what's going to happen. And
so let the story be thing.
Yeah, and I mean, my story is the story. Just a guy cutting things up, beating things up, and getting rid of it. 13 years of Catholic school.
Yeah, I mean, I found out that just in working my project that there's this thing called themes in the story, and you have to have a beginning, middle, and end. And it's just kind of like, but, you know, I just want to draw cool scenes.
Yeah.
I just want to do cool, you know, like, yeah, but how does that work in the story? It's like, it doesn't, but it'd be cool to have this person doing that. It's like, yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that I have to deal with now. It's like, well, I guess I have to be somewhat responsible with making the story cohesive and actually make sense, you know.
But then there's comments out there that don't bother with that at all, and that's not necessarily a bad thing either. So you can certainly maybe different structures for different projects sort of thing. So
I think at first a lot of artists who then write and do their own thing are judged a lot harsher than if you had a writer write and then you draw.
Yeah,
I've always been an art over story kind of guy. So yeah. Yeah. If you like it for the pictures, I'm happy.
Yeah. But see, now I'm getting a little more worked up when people make fun of the art, of the writing. It's like,
the best review I've ever gotten was when I did Hardworld. This guy wrote a letter, and I love letters. And the guy said, no, I'm going to shock it, but this guy said, what are you doing, Jeff Darrow? Why are you drawing this? You're saying, you look like you drew this comic with your penis. You're saying, hey, look at me. I'm drawing with my penis. Couldn't explain the fine lines. He was so pissed. I wanted to write it and send the money back. Great delivery.
That's probably one of those for Baptists.
Anyone else get a letter like that recently? No?
Not recently.
No. Not recently. I'm tired after that.
No letters. It's all text.
I think it's Rush. I'm probably Rush Limbaugh, probably. But I think your point's well taken, that when it's a creator-owned work, and this is all something that you created, you're a lot more sensitive about what people's reactions to that
is.
I was at iTunes and people can review my book and someone gave it like one star and I went to find out who they were. I was like, why did you give it one star?
You can have like 10 really good positive and then you have that one dickhead who is like makes something and your day is shit, because all I'm focused on is like, well, why is this, what is it about this? Like, I actually track one now, who is this person? And then when I realized who the person was, I realized it's not my demographic. I'm not doing the kind of comics that this person would like. And it's like, okay, but it's still the fact that I get so obsessed over a little negative.
Yeah, just take that one star.
Is it your baby?
It's gotten better over the years, but when I was younger, it's like, yeah, I couldn't differentiate between my art and myself. Anyone who attacked my art was attacking me. It's like there was a certain, it's just like, it's so personal. It's such a your thing that it's like you feel very connected to it. And if someone makes some harsh remark about it, they're attacking, even though it's like, now I realize that, well, not, it's like music, you can't always like, not everyone's going to like your song.
We recently had a review of a podcast episode of ours that was a 55-minute-long episode, and the reviewer said, if you skip minutes 15 through 50, then the episode was perfect.
People review the podcast?
And that was actually the Onion AV Club, who gave us a good review overall. But in this particular episode, it was because we deviated from comics, and they said, when these guys stop talking about comics and start talking about music or games or whatever, then it gets less interesting. And if you skip,
the majority of the episode, but it was a fantastic episode, but it was just skipped minutes 15 through 50, so I pulled that quote out and put that in the article I wrote about it on our website, because that was a keeper. Not as good as Jeff's letter, though. That takes the cake. That was really good.
Jim and Fernie. I've still got the letter. I got a letter from another guy. I swear to God, I'm glad I was living in France. He'd taken kind of pictures from Vogue. It's so like girls, but then there was like thread. I could send pictures and like cigarette burns in them and stuff. And I was like, I want to live in that world you created. Why can't I live in that world you created? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, Jesus.
Was this letter sent to your house?
It was.
I would move. Was this letter sent to your house?
No, it was sent to Dark Horse and they forwarded it. I think it was Rush Limbaugh.
Does anyone have any more questions? We're getting close to our mark here.
How much time do you spend on social media pushing your work?
Pushing our work versus just...
Yeah, just messing around?
Yes, you're right.
Just 12 hours of Facebook and then the rest of it, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Not too much time. Maybe a bit, like, you know, in between a page or, you know, Instagram a panel and try to get people, hey, look at me, I drew this.
I think if you're smart, it's all building the whole, because putting your personality out there and engaging an audience for whatever it is, even if you don't have something to sell at that time, pays off when you finally do have something to sell. So I think it's all valuable, even pissing around on Facebook.
Yeah. When I first did my my mini comic, when I got it printed, I sent out like 200 copies to people that I liked, and mostly through like Facebook. I reached out to people, even people that I didn't think, you know, I enjoy like Ed Brubaker's comics, but I think I don't even know if I've met him. So I was just like on Twitter, we talk a little bit. So I was like, hey, you know, maybe if you want to look at my comic. And then after that, people started, you know, retweeting it. Jim Lee like talked about it, and you know, so it's really, really nice. So I was able to reach a much wider audience just through Twitter alone, just by asking nice.
So as we kind of wrap up here, maybe could we just go down the panel and you could let people know where they can find you on the web to keep up with what's going on or to get your next project or to find out when things are coming out. Where can they find you?
Templesmith.com and shortly at the local Boston prison.
Tonight?
Probably after tonight.
Show closes.
I have a big cartel site, Becky Clunan, and I also have a Twitter, Becky Clunan, and on Facebook, the same thing. So. That's me.
JoeBenitez.com will send you to MySpace. No, I mean, I have links to my Twitter and Facebook and then MySpace, too, if anyone's still using that. Yeah, so JoeBenitez.com.
JeremyBanishton.blogspot.com and Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. But I'm generally on www.pornhub.com.
There might be a few people from there.
Mail.
Yeah, we're going to send to Dark Horse. Is that what you want now? So send your letters to Dark Horse. Well, thanks, Ben and Becky and Joe and Jeremy and Jeff for taking time to. I'm just going to do one quick plug. I don't even think I mentioned the name of the podcast, but it is the Secret Identity Podcast. So you can go to secretidentitypodcast.com if you want to check out episodes. And depending on how the audio is, we may be able to get this up there as well. Thank you.
So you go to a website, you click on what you want, and then you wait for its arrival. Now that's the excitement of most online shopping experiences, faceless and cold. But it certainly isn't the case at 80stees.com. The website is jam-packed with designs and characters that will bring back incredible memories. And once you order, know that you have a staff dedicated to quality that'll get your order to you very fast. 80stees.com will make sure the best dressed geek out there is you.